So we're beginning the last parsha of the Torah, and we read it every year on Simchat Torah, which usually does not fall out on Shabbos. And now, this year, does. But usually this last parsha gets read on Simchat Torah. It's the only parsha that's read, not on Shabbos. And the parsha is really Moshe Rabbeinu's parting words, parting blessing from Yisrael. In that sense, it's a sad parsha. We're going to lose Moshe in this week's parsha. And we're not going to meet him again for another few months until we hit the book of Shmos. All of Bereishis, we don't have Moshe. Vezosa Bracha ends, the last eight psukim is the description of Moshe's ascent up the mountain and his passing and Yeshua taking over. And the last psukim are a recording of Moshe's greatness and uniqueness and his unique prophecy. We read the parsha over and over and over again in shul so that everyone gets an aliyah, everyone gets to make a blessing on the Torah, even the kids get to make a blessing. One of the things we're going to read in this parsha is that the Torah belongs to all of us. There was once a rabbi who was traveling and he came upon a beggar. And the beggar sat down to break bread with him and he behaved in a very uncouth fashion. And then the beggar said, the rabbi said to the beggar, "What right do you have to life? You behave like an animal." So the beggar said, "Well, then teach me Torah." He said, "Torah? You don't know how to be a human being. I'm going to teach you Torah." So the beggar turned to the rabbi and said, "You're a thief." So he said, "Why am I a thief?" So he said, "Because you're taking what's mine." He said, "What did I take of you?" He said, "In our parsha, the Zos HaBracha, it says, Morasha Kilat Yaakov. Belongs to all of us. I don't know anything but that one pasuk. But that one pasuk says that it's something that was given as an inheritance. You can't take from me what's already mine. The Torah belongs to everyone. It is not a yerusha, something to be given over, but something that we've already received as a morasha. That's the first pasuk we teach a child. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded us the Torah. Morasha kilat Yaakov. It's the inheritance of all of the congregation of Yaakov. Every one of us owns a portion in that. And no one can take that from us. So this beggar knew nothing but that. But he knew that. And that's a phenomenal concept. We start a child off learning. You have a portion. It's yours. Morasha kilat Yaakov. And the Torah is all ours. God gave different crowns, different potentials for greatness within Judaism. If my father wasn't a Kohen, I can't be a Kohen, right? That's one of the crowns. If my father wasn't a king or wasn't from the Davidic dynasty, I can't be a king. But if my father wasn't a rabbi, I could still be a rabbi. Quite the contrary. Chazal say, people whose parents are rabbis, more than likely they won't be rabbis. God does it that way, makes it harder on them, so that people won't think you have to have a father who's a rabbi. Hashem makes it that the paupers, the people who didn't have time to learn Torah, from them come out the great scholars of the Jewish people, and the rabbis had a rule, Hizaru b'vnei aniyim, be careful from the sons of paupers. Shemehim, because from them, Atidim, in the future, will come out the great giants of the Jewish people. Don't think it's the sons of the rabbis that are going to be the next giants. No. It could be the Baal Tshuva, it could be anyone. God says, I made one crown, right? I made the crown of Torah available.
A Ben Ger.
Yeah, a lot of great. Rose, where did David come from? From Rose.
Was the Ger Rebbe a convert? Is that what that comes from, or is that
I don't think
the
so.
Town of Ger?
I think it's the town of Ger.
I was getting it.
Hashem says, the one crown I made available to everyone is the crown of Torah. If you take that crown, you'll get all the crowns. If you don't take that crown, then you indicate that even if you could, you wouldn't have any of the other crowns. That's the one crown anyone who wants can acquire Torah. It's Morasha Kilat Yaakov. Moshe Rabbeinu begins the blessing, V'zot HaBiracha. Because you guys are one day going to be big speakers, I'll tell you Dvar Torah I don't usually say. I save it for, I keep it in my back pocket. It's always, you can apply it to any occasion. And it's a Dvar Torah that everyone likes. So it's good to know. So we'll go off on a tangent. You guys might have to say Dvar Torah one day. So it's a good Dvar Torah for V'zot HaBiracha. It's a good Dvar Torah for Vayechi. It's a good Dvar Torah for any occasion. And you'll see why in a second. Yeah.
Just a quick question, this is off subject, but has anybody actually finished the whole Torah, like the scroll?
What do you mean?
read it from cover to cover?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Many times. Every Jew is supposed to do it every year. We have a mitzvah every week to do Shnayim Mikra, to read the Parsha twice, Vecha Targum, and once the translation. And the ideal way to do that is that a person know how to read it from the Torah, and he takes out a Sefer Torah and reads it from the Torah. And there are many Jews who do that. Thursday night, they take out a Sefer Torah, and they read the Parsha through in the Torah twice.
With a minion, they call up seven aliyahs.
No. Without a minion, on their own. Once upon a time, you used to learn from the Sefer Torah.
So you're allowed to take a Torah out of the Aron HaKodesh, open it, and read it.
Correct.
Without a minion. Okay.
I was
not aware that you could do that without a minion.
Yeah, you could.
When I have a family, they have it in their house. They do it every week.
Yeah, that's the way you're supposed to learn from in ancient times, they learned from Sefer Torah. That was their chumash. Okay, so...
I once went to a show and they were reading the whole Torah.
Tonight they do all of the book of Devarim, usually.
Oh, it's just Devarim?
Yeah.
Could you do that in a night?
I don't think so.
Someone's got to be really good with, really good...
Well, think about it. Could you read the whole English Tanakh tonight?
Probably not.
I'm not. So it's the same thing with someone who's with you. My Rav finished shots again.
Okay. אולי נחמם את הפיצה שיש לנו? יש לנו במקפיא, יש לנו... יש לנו גם כמה חתיכות, לא? נראה לי יש גם במקפיא אחר. חמוס, לא? לא יודע. אוקיי, אז נוציא אוכל אחר. בסדר. אז לא, בסדר. מה? אם אפשר, תודה.
Thursday you do the 6th and 7th, that covers you for Shabbat, because you can read on Shabbat anyway.
Even if you do it twice, or three times, okay,
so I'll quickly tell the Dvar Torah, that's always good to have in your back pocket, the practical Dvar Torah. Chazal tell us that we have different blessings in Tanakh. Avram, Yitzchak blessed his son Yaakov, right? V'yitem lecha Elokim, and he concluded his blessing by Yikra. Lo, Yitzchak called Yaakov and blessed him before he left the Padan Aram. Yaakov called his children in, and he blessed them by Yikra Yaakov levanav. And Yaakov concluded his blessing, v'zot asher diber lehem avihim. Moshe Rabbeinu blessed Am Yisrael v'zot ha-beracha, and he concluded his blessing, Ashrecha Yisrael, and David HaMelech began Ashrei Ha'ish. So Chazal tell us that these blessings, each one picks up where the other one left off. Yitzchak concluded his blessings with Vayikra. Yaakov began his blessing with Vayikra. Yaakov concluded his blessing with V'zot Asher Diber Lehem Aviyem. Moshe began his blessing with V'zot HaBracha. Moshe concluded his blessing with Ashrecha Yisrael. David began his blessing with Ashrei Ha'ish. Very nice. What's the Medrash telling us? So Shlomo Fisher explained it with the following mashal. There was once a king who called in his servant, and he said, "You've been so faithful, I'll give you whatever you want." The servant said, "Okay, what I want is that every time I come with you, as many sacks as I bring, you'll fill them with material for the rest of my life. That's what I want." And everyone laughed, "What a fool. That's what he asks for. He could have asked for a mountain of gold. He could have asked for a diamond necklace. He asks for a material." The king said, "No problem. If that's what you want, that's fine." Comes in the first day with two sacks. They fill it with material. Fine. The next day comes in, he already has 8 sacks. The next day, 32 sacks. The next day, 128 sacks. The next day, 500 sacks. The next day, 2,000 sacks. By the end of the week, he's already up to 16,000 sacks. By the end of the next week, he's already surpassed 1,000,000. And you could figure out that before the month was over, he cleaned out the king of all his wealth. What was the brilliance of this this guy? That he took what was a blessing one day and turned it into a vessel to accept more blessing the next day. Every person has limited capacity. There's only so much a person can do. But when a person takes that capacity and develops it into further capacity to accept more, then he can continue growing. When Yaakov was coming to bless his children, so Yitzchak had one son. How much blessing could he give one son? He's one person. So Yitzchak gave him as much blessing as he could, but he ended at a certain point. He couldn't move forward from there. Yaakov already has 12 tribes before him. He could pick up where his father left off. So that's why the Pasuk shows us that Yaakov picked up where Yitzchak left off. Yaakov is blessing only 12 children. There's a limit to what he can bless. Moshe already sees the Jewish people. So Moshe can pick up where Yaakov left off. And that's why Moshe begins, V'zos Avracha, where Yaakov left off, V'zos HaShadi V'leim Aviv. David HaMelech sees the kingdom. This isn't just the people. These are kingdom of Israel. So he can pick up where Moshe Rabbeinu left off. And in essence, this is what happens. A child comes the first year, he learns Aleph Beis. The next year, he uses that Aleph Beis to learn Chumash. The next year, he uses the Chumash he learned to learn Rashi. The next year, he uses the Chumash and Rashi as a basis to learn Mishnah, and the Mishnah becomes a basis for Gemara. The thing he invests his strength in learning one year becomes the tool for learning the next year. So we get more and more vessels, and then we grow wealthier and wealthier, and that's why when Yaakov gets blessed by his father Yitzchak tells him, V'yiten lecho ha'elokim. What does Rashi say? Yiten v'yachzor v'yiten. God should give and give again and give again. Why? Why not give it all at once? Because there's a limit to how much you can get at one shot. As you grow, you have more capacity. And if you think about it, this Torah, people like the story. You could start with the story. And it's applicable to every situation. Person's getting married, you tell them now you have more potential. There's a bris, the child is going to have more potential. We wish him the God lo Torah, chupam ha'asimtom. Every occasion this Torah is applicable. So now that's the classical Torah. You should always have Torah in your back pocket. Now let's begin our parsha. So our parsha begins with Zota Beracha. This is the blessing that Moshe blessed the Jewish people. Moshe is described as Ish Elokim, the man of God. That's a great description. Not many people merited to be referred to as the man of God. It doesn't mean the man of God. Ish Elokim. Ish could refer to master of. Ish could mean to have an intimate relationship, like husband and wife. And all of them are applicable to Moshe. Moshe asks. God does what Moshe asks for. Moshe is Ish Elokim. And Moshe concludes his life with a blessing for Am Yisrael. A lot of people tried that and were not as successful as Moshe. When Noah wants to bless his children, there's a fight going on. One son is being cursed. He's not fit for blessing. When Yitzchak wants to bless his children, there's a fight going on. One son gets what the other son wants. When Yaakov blesses his children, there's a fight going on. Shimon, Levi, Reuven, they all get over the head. They're not fit for blessing. When Moshe comes to bless the Jewish people, he's fortunate. He's at a point where everyone's just getting blessing and there's peace. And Moshe worked his way up in life. He started, in the beginning of the Torah, Moshe is described as an Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian. That's how he's described. The daughters of Yisrael describe him as Ish Mitzri, Hitzilanu Miyad Ahoim. That Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. And he worked his way up till at the end of his life, he was called Ish Elokim. In contradistinction, Noah begins his life as Ish Tzadik, Yashar, and Ish Tam.
Yeah.
And then, how's Noah end his life? Vayachel Noah Ish Adama. Noah went down, he started being a man of the earth. In life, we can go both ways. A person has to try and grow. Noah was focused on not being harmed by anyone else. Stayed in his own bubble. So he went from being Ish Tam to Ish Adama. He couldn't keep growing. Moshe spent his life investing in other people, building Am Yisrael. So he ended up growing. Yeah.
He didn't have to think of, he didn't move forward because he's
understood where he was.
Who?
If you tell that he was a Ish, he was Ish Tam, Ish Tzadik.
Yeah.
What else? Ish, I don't know. If you stay there, focus, as you said, on yourself, and you stay in the bubble, you can't go upwards.
Right.
You go down. That's what it means.
That's what, yeah, that's what Bechtam Sarf means today. Be careful, it's boiling hot.
He wasn't a bad person.
He wasn't a bad person. But in order to grow, you got to be connected to the cloud.
You have to move upwards.
But the way to move upwards is not by focusing on maintaining yourself, but by focusing on growing others. Moshe concludes with words of appeasement. And we have to remember that. People sometimes give speeches. You gotta know, every prophet concluded with appeasement. And they all learned from Moshe. You always gotta end on a good note. And wherever you are, try to end on a good note. Not only in Torah. Moshe knows that he's about to die. And whenever a person's about to die, they sometimes reach heights that they've reached their apex. And that's the time that he gives them a blessing. What's the bracha? So, Moshe blesses each shevet with what they deserve. You'll notice that the parasha begins with a vav. Vizot ha-bracha. What's it connected to? Look in Tehillim. We say it every Shabbos. Tehillim, we have Tfilah le-Moshe. What are the next two words? Ish Elokim. What's our parasha? Vizot ha-bracha she-berach Moshe. Ish Elokim. Because on this same day, on the last day of Moshe's life, he composed those 11 chapters of Tehillim. A prayer for each of the 11 tribes, and corresponding to that, he blessed them. Where's the 12th tribe? That's Shimon. Shimon, there was a problem with. Shimon sinned in Yaakov's time, together with Levi. So when Yaakov blesses the other tribes, he says to Shimon and Levi, you guys have a problem. So Darabah. This is homemade, guys. Hot, straight from the... It's because all the pizza stores are closed, and the one that promised us... So I tried ordering pizza 3 hours ago. They told me to call again now. Oh, sorry, guys. Yeah. Okay. Toda rabah. Laila tov. So Shimon had sinned with killing out the city of Shechem. And Shimon had sinned at the Egel. Whereas Levi fixed. Levi didn't. We're not quote those egos.
Okay.
And Levi was okay throughout the desert. Shimon sinned, what? At Baal Peor.
Mm-hmm.
A few days earlier. Everyone's going with the girls of the Midianites. Shimon leads the way, the tribe of Shimon.
Korach.
With Korach, right? So, but Korach was also the Levim. So that, it doesn't seem was against the Shvatim. So Shimon doesn't get a blessing here. They get an allusion to a blessing. We'll see. They do show up in the blessing, but not overtly. So Moshe is going to bless them after he finished praying for them. This is the fourth blessing in Moshe's life. Moshe blessed Am Yisrael 3 times previously in the Torah. And this is the concluding blessing. He ends his life with blessing Am Yisrael. V'zot ha-beracha. Chazal say, bracha. Bracha is also like brecha, like a swimming pool. When you see a pool of water, you see a mikveh, people go into the mikveh, they come out clean. So too Moshe and his blessing helped people come out pure. Moshe was mekarev et al-chokim. He took people who were distant and he brought them close. And here we see a key point. People think if you want to bring someone close, start yelling at them. What are you doing desecrating Shabbos? What's wrong with you driving on Shabbos? Don't you know? It's one of the Ten Commandments. No. You want to bring someone close, speak positively. Moshe has people in Am Yisrael that are problematic. How does he bring them close? He tells them the blessing. He tells them the positive, the good. We always think of Moshe as tough, stern, right? Halacha. This is what you got to do. Moshe was mikarev rechokim, the Medrash says. Ish Elokim. He had a special relationship with Hashem, like a husband and wife. And he blessed Am Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why did he merit to the great level of Moshe Rabbeinu? The pasuk says, "Asher berach Moshe ish ha'elokim," and Moshe, the man of God, blessed et bnei Yisrael. Simple reading: he blessed the Jewish people. What does the word "et" also mean? "Et" also means with
et
the Jewish people.
With or
et elokim italech noach. Noach walked with God.
So it means with, or what are the other meanings?
Or the. It's a
direct object.
Okay.
Now, oh, thank you, English teacher. Shabbat. I wouldn't have known that. Thank you. Seriously. So, et elokim, ish elokim et bnei Yisrael, Chazal tell us, it means, how did Moshe merit to the level of ish elokim, to be the man of God? Because he was et bnei Yisrael with the Jewish people. Chazal tell us, Hillel would have merited to prophecy like Moshe, but the generation wasn't fitting. The only reason Moshe could be Moshe was because the Jewish people at that time were on that level. Moshe was ish elokim et bnei Yisrael, with the Jewish people who were fitting to have a prophet on the level of Moshe at that time. That's key. People think it's enough if I work on myself. I'll grow. No. You will not be able to grow beyond where the generation is fit. If you fix the generation, if you bring everyone up with you, then you could keep growing.
That fits together with the Midrash, with the tablets, that when they went down, he also couldn't carry anymore the...
Yafeh, beautiful, I didn't think of it, right? Yafeh.
He wasn't able to carry the original tablets from Hashem gave him, because Israel went the level down, and they made the thing with the Chet HaEgel. So I have told you, it was with, Moshe could only be as high as Israel were.
Chazal tell us, the Pasuk says, this is the blessing that Moshe blessed, Ish HaElokim. One reading of that is, he was the man of God. The other understanding is Moshe, Ish, Moshe the human, Elokim, also the angel. Sometimes he was human, sometimes he was angel. He had times in his life when he's running away from Paro, then he's human, he's running from a king. Then he had times when he's standing against the most powerful man on the universe at the time, he's standing opposite Paro, and he's telling him what to do. Everyone has to know in life there are times when you have to bow your head, and there are going to be times when you'll be able to stand tall. Part of being a powerful person is knowing when you have to bow down your head. Moshe knew there was a time Paro was ready to kill him. He ran. He didn't say, well, I'll stand up to him, I'll show him. People sometimes think that they'll get away with all kinds of things. If the boss is upset at you, today he's the boss, put your head down and say you're sorry and move forward in life. So a person has to know, even Moshe Rabbeinu. The pasuk describes him as Ish. He had times where he was the human. He had to be on the run. He had times where he was Elohim. He was angel-like. Lifnei Moto, he blessed the Jewish people before his death, in the face of death. Chazal tell us the angel of death came to take his life, and Moshe said, get out of here. God told me, you're not going to touch me. You have no right. And we went through the Medrash a few weeks ago about Moshe's discussion with the Malchamav. And Moshe begins, Vayomar, Pasuk Beis. Moshe says, Hashem Sinai Ba. God came from Sinai, Vizarach Mesair. When he came to give us the Torah, he begins with the praise of God. When he came to give us the Torah, he shone from Seir, and came from Paran, he came from Esav, he came from Yishmael, and he came from his holy myriad of angels to give us the Torah. What does it mean? That God came from all these nations. So from here we have the tradition that God offered the Torah to every nation. People think that the Torah began at Sinai. The Torah began before creation. Before God created the world, thousands of generations beforehand, God created the Torah. And then God sent a version of the Torah before the flood, with Mesushela. God sent prophets before Noah's time. Yeah. Mesushela was one of the pious people before the flood. He lived till a ripe old age, and then God said, it's over. The people aren't listening to you. There are a few people God sent. We will learn, Bezrat Hashem. We will have Parsha class over the next few weeks, even if we don't have class. We will learn the Parsha. Not in the Sukkah, probably in Machon Meir, but next Thursday, next Wednesday, or Thursday, we will have class, Bezrat Hashem. We will continue learning. So we'll learn. We'll learn about all the giants, that there were prophets before Noah. We have on tradition that God sent other prophets to give the Torah. Not exactly our version of the Torah, but a moral code for the world. And the world wouldn't listen. Avraham Avinu had wrote 400 chapters on Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, what's prohibited idol worship. When he was in jail, he wrote 400 chapters, a book of about which idolatry is prohibited by God. They had. That's why when people get so impressed with the codes of Hammurabi, I don't understand them. A, they have nothing to do with the Torah. Anyone who knows Torah and reads the codes of Hammurabi, you're going to have a hard time to see similarities. And B, even if it did have rules, laws from the Torah, we have on tradition that the Torah was given numerous times before we got it. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu says at the end of the Torah, before God offered us the Torah, what?
No, I never heard that answer.
Okay, I don't know. It's not written anywhere. I mean, it's written in Midrashim that there were a lot of people that were sent with moral codes from God to mankind. And we don't know what those moral codes said. But one of the things it says here in the Torah is that God offered the Arabs, the Muslims, God offered whatever you'll call the nomadic Arab tribes of the time, Paran, Yishmael's descendants, and God offered, God also offered Seir, the Edomites, the descendants of... Wait, let's grab a picture maybe before you go. We'd been saying that Hashem offered the Torah to the different nations, and that's why the codes of Hammurabi and stuff like that wouldn't bother us. That's one of the reasons. So Hashem gave the Torah to Hashem offered it to the nations. Explains the Rambam. Hashem sent a Navi to the Edomites. Not that Hashem suddenly appeared like a Sinai to all these nations, but rather Hashem sent a prophet to each nation, offering them, are you interested in my code? I think we have to just decide, are we going to go in depth, and then we're going to discuss this for another 5 minutes, or are we going to try to cover the parsha within the next hour? What's our goal? How many people want depth? How many people want to cover the parsha within the next hour? Okay, so we'll go in depth. So here, it's worth discussing, huh? We have on tradition, God offers the Ishmaelites the Torah, and they say, what's in it? So God says, it says you can't steal. So what, we can't steal? What do you mean? That's our lives. We can't have a Torah like that. God offers Esav's offspring the Torah. They say, what does your code say, God? God says you can't kill. They say, but our blessing, we were blessed that we live by the sword. We, our whole parnassus, we go to wars, we're mercenaries. We can't have a Torah like that. No. God comes to the Jews. The Jews don't ask what's in it. Jews say, well, do whatever you say, God. And then God says, I have an oral law, too. The Jews say, we'll have to listen to rabbis. We don't want to listen to rabbis. Give us a Torah. We'll do the Torah the way you tell us. We'll understand. We can understand Torah. God picks up a mountain and says, you take that Torah or you're dead. They say, fine. Okay. So that's how we understand the difference between Nasev and Nishma, and why later they needed the mountain over their heads. Because they said, God, your Torah will take. The rabbis, we don't want. But we want to understand the Torah. Every Jew feels connected to Hashem. What do I need a tradition for? Let me open a Torah, I'll read it, I'll understand. God says, no. If you study, you become a rabbi, you'll be part of the tradition. But you have the potential to be part of the tradition, but you got to go by the tradition. You can't accept it the way you want. The question is, why didn't God tell us what's written in the Torah? And why does God tell each nation the thing that goes against their grain? Why couldn't God tell the Ishmaelim, well, it says in the Torah, you have to do kindness. It says in the Torah, you do achnasas orchim. They do achnasas orchim. They bring people into their tents, right? They're good at achnasas orchim. God had to give them the one mitzvah that goes against their grain. And why didn't God do that to us?
Yes, he did.
What did he do?
You're stubborn.
We're stubborn. So we'll get to our stubbornness in a minute.
But you have to take everything. So if there's one, then it's finished.
Oh, so let's just sharpen that a little bit. You're right in what you said. It's a drop sharper. God comes and says, I'm going to tell you, I created the world. This is the best way to live. When a person says, God, tell me, what does it say? What's he saying? He's saying, God, I have a mind, and you have a mind. If you agree to me, I'll do what you say. If you have a different plan as to how this world has to look, then I think it's not going to work. We all approach the Torah that way. Our first inclination is, when we approach the Torah, we think, well, I have a certain attitude about equality, the way the world should look. I have a certain attitude how I think what I think is humane, moral. And then we look at the Torah and say, does this fit to what I think? The second we're doing that, we are making the Torah human. If can no longer be godly because it's limited to what my mind understands. I'm limiting the Torah. The second the people ask God, well, tell me what's in the Torah. What they're saying is, God, I will do the Torah so long as I think it's right. Well, then I'm limiting the Torah to my understanding. Why do the nations admire the Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu tells us. We read it a few weeks ago. He says they admire us for our statutes, for the mitzvahs that cannot be explained logically. Why? Because if you come to an expert doctor, and he tells you, you know what the cure? You want to be cured? Well, you have to do is dance on your right foot 3 times every morning. Dance on your right foot, you'll be cured. So if it's the first time you walk into him, you walk out, you say he's a quack, goodbye. But if you've heard about him that he's cured everything under the planet, then you say, wait a second, he must know something that I don't know. He's a genius. Who would have ever thought to dance on your right foot 3 times every morning? I'm going to do this. And you do it. Why? Because you know he's smarter than you. So too the Torah. You have the laws that everyone understands. Don't kill, don't steal. Then you have laws that no one understands. Eat kosher. Why? Don't eat pig. Why? We don't understand. And the nations admire us for the mitzvahs we don't understand.
Yes,
because when they see all the other mitzvahs and they see what a tremendous lifestyle we have, they say, wait a second, this is brilliant. We can't replicate this. This is godly. Then they see, oh, there are even mitzvahs that they don't understand. They say, ah, now we understand that this, we admire them for the mitzvahs they don't understand. When the nation said to God, tell us what's in the Torah, what they were saying is God will accept what we understand. The second you say that, God says, okay, I'll show you what doesn't work for you. You can't accept the Torah when you're limiting the Torah to what you understand. I'm God. I'm telling you what's the Torah. The Jewish people said, God, naseh, we'll do whatever you say. We don't know what's in the Torah. Whatever you say, we'll do. V'nishma, and then we'd also like to understand. There's no ideal to observe without understanding. The ideal is naseh v'nishma. We will do, and we also want to hear. We're curious. We also want to understand what we're doing. But it's not a precondition. You guys got the difference?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you said. You're right. But it's just a drop. I just want to hone the point that you said. Yeah, someone wants something.
Yeah, I just had a couple questions. Are we supposed to take this literally, or is this also something that's kind of like a story and it's just like a metaphor? Like, did Hashem like actually go to like speak to the Ishmaelites?
So that's why I quoted the Rambam, Maimonides in the Epistle to the Ammonites, and the Rambam over there says that God literally sent a prophet. It's not that he appeared to them, but he did send a prophet to the people who came and said, God sent me and he's offering you a Torah. And their general attitude was, well, what's in it?
But they, like, do they have a way of, like, they believe this prophet was from God? Like,
obviously,
like
He obviously did some kinds of miracles that they knew he was a prophet.
Like, my thing is, it's like, why, like, Hashem obviously knew that they weren't going to accept it, right? So, like, is it that he did it just so, like, later on they couldn't say, like, oh, if you would have given it to us, then we would have been your chosen people?
Right, that's what Chazal say. That a few things happened at that point. At that point they said, what's in it? God answered. They said, okay, we're not interested. And not only that, God, if that's what you have to say, we're not interested in the 7 Noahide laws. They officially said we're no longer performing the Noahide laws. And until then they weren't too serious about them either. But then they decided we're not interested. And at that point God said, you had an option to be at least moral with the 7 Noahide laws. You're not taking that option. I offered you a gift. Technically, I created this world. I don't owe you anything for keeping the Noahide laws. I could say you keep them. Good. You don't keep them. I'll kill you like I did to the Sodomites. But I was kind. I said, I'll do you an extra favor. You nations, if you keep the 7 Noahide laws, I'll reward you for it. I don't owe you a reward. Really, I created this world. Now I have a right to demand of you a moral life, and I don't owe you anything for that. But I said, I'll give you a gift. I'll give you rewards if you keep them. Now that you've made declarations, you, the nations of the world, have officially declared, our policy is now UN meeting, policy from now on, Geneva Accords, no 7 Noahide laws. We don't care for them. Well, once you've taken on that policy, I still hold you accountable to keep them, but I take my gift back. Now, even if you keep them, I'm not giving you anything. That's what I demand of you, but I'm not giving you anything for it. Because I'll say this was a turning point in world history. When the world said, we're not interested, God, we will have nothing to do with you, and we will hate your people from that point onward. That's why it's called Sinai. Why it's Sinai from Sina. At that moment, the world said, we hate them. We're not going to do what you want, and we're going to hate the people who do.
Can I ask one more?
Sure.
Sorry to hold it.
No, it's fine.
When Hashem offered the Jews the Torah, are we talking about Sinai, or are we talking about, like, Abraham?
No, we're talking about Sinai.
And did all the Jews, like we accepted it, obviously, but, like, did we all individually accept it as well as a nation?
Yeah, not only all of us. We have on tradition that every neshama of every ger that was destined to come was also standing there and said Naaseh v'nishma.
And they had a choice in the matter? Like, did some people not?
On the written law, they had a choice. So, you have to factor that by the time they stood at Sinai, it was after a year of witnessing miracles, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, and seeing the Egyptians sunk. They had Bchira Chofshit. You see, they did do the Egel 49 days later, but but at the end of the day, they did...
was it fair that we got to see all those miracles and then decide, and then just realize that they didn't really get the benefit of, like, seeing all those?
So they knew the miracles, though.
They did.
They were aware of it. I mean, it was a world-known thing, the miracles of Egypt.
Yeah, but here it is a difficult thing.
That's true. Then why did Yisro pack his bags after serving every form of idol and come and join the Jewish people? And Amalek were his neighbors. They got the same messenger as he did. They put together their arms and said, we're going to kill him. What's the difference?
Why did who?
Attitude. He had Yisro and Amalek, neighbors.
Yisro knew Moshe.
Yeah, but Yisro still. When he heard all the miracles, he wasn't yet Jewish. He packed his bags and came. Other nations packed their bags and went to attack. Everyone has free choice.
Right. But he's kind of at a closer point with the Jews. I mean, he's through family and stuff like that. And whatever.
True.
Yet he was able to live with Moshe. I mean, Moshe...
What was the first thing he did to Moshe when he caught him?
He imprisoned him.
Without food.
Without
wanting
food.
Him to die for 7 years, right.
But then afterwards he got closer. Like, he wasn't family.
And what was his precondition to letting Moshe marry his daughter?
What was his precondition?
He said...
That he didn't leave.
Oh, there was another condition.
One
of his children, he doesn't teach him about God. He lets him discover it himself. And when Yisro hears that the Egyptians died, he feels bad for them. Yisro's still an Egyptian at the end of the day. He was one of Pharaoh's chief advisors, one of the top three advisors. Yisro was very connected to the Egyptians, emotionally. Even as he's thanking God for everything good that happened, he feels really bad for the Egyptians. At the end of the day, we learn from there how gentle we have to be with the ger about his past. Even Yisro. Pharaoh wanted him dead. Right? Even Yisro.
Who's the son who didn't learn about God?
Gershom.
Who?
Gershom. Stick around. Bezrat Hashem in 3 weeks. And Shoftim 3 or 4 weeks. 4 or 5 weeks. We will learn all about it. From the story of Pesel Micha. Yeah.
I kind of up the subject. I was thinking about, like, the Torah is the law of God, and I was thinking, is this right to think that the law of nature, right? The law of nature says, you know, if there's an animal that's weak, you know, it'll probably become prey and be the first one to get eaten by the lion, or, you know, whatever the predator is. So, and you were saying earlier, like, if someone's not doing Hashem's will, then Hashem could just kill him like he did Sodom and Gomorrah. Could you say in some similar way that, just like the laws of nature, if you're not following the laws of nature, or if you're weakened in the laws of nature, maybe, that you'll be a victim of the laws of nature. In the same way, if you're not following the laws of Torah, you'll be some kind of you'll be killed possibly by the laws of the Torah, I guess. Is there some kind of analogy that would fit with that, or...
I don't know. That depends on a bigger question that we discussed in the book of Yonah about Hashgacha on the nations.
Uh-huh.
Meaning, we discussed that there's a big machlokas rishonim. How close attention, so to speak, does God pay to the individual guy's action, the nations? There seems to be a more global involvement than a less personal involvement.
Hashgacha
pratit. That's what we discussed over there. So then how come God is sending a prophet to the nations? So when we learned the book of Yonah, we discussed different shitot as to how that works. Okay. Just a second. Excuse me, wait.
Maybe the story of Yonah shows that, they're a bunch of evil people, right? And Yonah is just a prophet. And it worked. You know, they did turn towards Hashem. So there's potential to... and they didn't have any miracles happening for them. They didn't have a whole Avram, right? They didn't have Avram like that, kind of miracles, and they turned towards Hashem.
Yeah,
but
that's a nice answer.
But wasn't the leader of them, like, Paro?
According to the Midrash, Basha Pshat.
I just wanted to add one more thing to my point. When Moshe was imprisoned by, you know, he survived without food. Like, Yisro witnessed, like, what he thought was a huge miracle and, you know, a hand of God there. So that's just, like, an addition to
okay.
his faith that he eventually realized.
Yeah, but you could use that, you could use the same analogy. Nimrod, who threw Avraham in the pit and didn't feed him for many times, and he wasn't it something like that? He also didn't feed him for a while. He witnessed the miracle, but he still went against God.
I'm just saying he had more of an advantage than the Amalek or anyone else.
But who had more to lose?
Huh?
Amalek or Yitro? Yitro was on the top of the leadership.
I was finished. He's not top anymore.
But he was Kohen Midian, Yisro. He was Kohen Midian, he's telling you. He was the head of Midian. He had some position of leadership in Midian.
He had much more to lose than Amalek, I think. And I'm like, we don't even have persons, only hallucinations.
Something to lose means nothing when you're like, sure, I have just this dirt farm, but I have no reason to give it up. Me, and then the other person, yeah, I may own this million-dollar enterprise, but I've seen God's miracles. I'm gonna give it up. It's a difference of what experiences. Drive you to give up what you have.
But the whole question is whether it was fair.